Thank you very much, Ken. And hello, everyone. Welcome to Awakening at Home, Part 5. And as you know, this is when I am kind of sharing eights, I'll call them, that when practiced, really useful to awakening. And we've gone over the first one, of course, being having a spiritual aspiration, kind of a guiding intention for discernment. Second one is contemplation, which of course is opening yourself to inner wisdom. Tonight when I was doing the seven steps teaching, if you were here, I taught something that I call the four principles of God. That's an example, contemplation. You also, you know, maybe shown what divine law is, how divine law works, what your part is in divine law. You may be shown the difference between the ego and inner wisdom, and, you know, just all kinds of teachings come from within when you open yourself to contemplation. And you know, there are lots and 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 lots of great teachings on the outside. Lots of books, lots of teachers, and very good ones. But there's nothing like it passes through the mind, and the mind gets a chance to interpret it, which means distort it in some cases, or maybe just have like a missing piece so that you don't completely get it. It doesn't go as deep as it could have, for example. But when the clarity comes from within, it's from before mind, and it's received before mind somehow, so that there's a very, very clear understanding. So, you know, contemplation is opening up to that absolute clarity that comes directly from within. Also, another great advantage to contemplation is, as we all know, the real problem is the belief in separation, the belief that I am a separate individual being. Everything else is different from me, right? That's the real problem. And we don't always transcend that problem by reading from books outside of us because the book seems separate, or by learning from teachers outside of us because the teacher seems separate. So somehow that idea of separation can remain intact. But when this incredible wisdom that is beyond your thinking mind, beyond your learning, starts coming to you from within, somehow you start to realize that you are connected to something. That you are not separate, that you are not individual, that you are not cut off. So learning from within, learning from something that is beyond your thinking mind and yet it's accessible within yourself, it really teaches that you are not the separate individual, and therefore it erases the problem. Remember what A Course in Miracles says, one problem, one solution, right? So contemplation is a great part of that solution. So again, number one, spiritual aspiration. Number two, contemplation. That takes us to number three, inquiry and noticing. And this again was that root cause inquiry, that looking underneath the blankets of your upsets, to find out what your false beliefs are that are in the way, that are causing your upset. Remember, you are never, ever upset for the reason you think. You are not upset because of that person, that president-elect, that environmental problem, that fattening, salty food. You know, you're never upset for the reason of anything that appears to be outside of you. It's always because of a belief in the mind. And so, root cause inquiry is one way of looking and noticing what within you is causing you to be upset. It was interesting because yesterday, when I was talking to Rick Archer, I don't remember exactly what I was saying, but I think I was talking about some of the beliefs that I uncovered during my relationship with Laurent. Like I saw that hate is not real, that hate was a false belief. I saw that rejection is not real, that rejection is a false belief. And one thing that he said, and I don't think I even talked to him about root cause inquiry, but one thing he said was that I reminded him of Byron Katie, or that I was kind of like Byron Katie. And I know where he got that from. I mean, I think I know. Because what Byron Katie and I have in common is looking to see what the true cause of upset is, right? Rather than just blaming something in the environment for my upset. Looking, finding the believing, Kate would call it the believing that I was doing that was causing my upset, taking responsibility and letting go of my believing, right? Oh, yeah, and I'm noticing that Dove is saying, I am upset because I chose the wrong teacher. And when he first wrote that, I didn't know what he was talking about, so I just kind of ignored the comment. But then Cheryl says, yes, the wrong teacher being ego. And yeah, that would be a fact then. I'm upset because I'm listening to the ego. Yeah, absolutely. But I think that when, what I'm talking about here, with the root cause inquiry, is looking at exactly how the ego gets my attention. That might be a good way of seeing it. When the ego starts whispering about abandonment, for example, or rejection, or unworthiness, what is it that the ego is whispering that is causing me to listen to that wrong teacher? How does it get me? Where does it get my attention? And learning that so that it's not as easy for the ego to get my attention anymore. When I went through the unworthiness thing, which was a super, super big thing for me, it was not a tiny thing. And I was practicing root cause inquiry at the root of many root cause inquiries, many apparent problems that I was upset about, that I looked within to find out what was really happening. I kept coming back to unworthiness again, unworthiness again, unworthiness again. And just uncovering it over and over and over and over and over again, and seeing that that was at the root of so many of my upsets, so many of my apparent problems. That alone must be what healed it. I mean, just looking at it again and again and again and again. Because remember, our awareness is healing. So when you use root cause inquiry to expose something to awareness, especially over and over and over again, what happens is it heals. The interesting thing for me is often when a false idea healed, the very last time that idea would come up, the very last time, I would giggle. Like let's say that one expression of the idea that I'm unworthy is that I'm trying to remember how my mind used to tell me that I was unworthy. I know it did it all the time, but I can't, isn't it funny? I can't remember. It never said I'm unworthy. Never, ever, ever used that language. Maybe things like I'm stupid. I really don't remember. Isn't that funny? I'm ugly. I remember I'm ugly. I remember that one, so I guess I'll go with that one. But it had many, many, many other lines. I don't clean the house well enough. I have many, many lines that it would use that were all really whispering, I'm unworthy. But, what would happen when this would heal is one of these lines would come up. I'm useless, let's say. I'm useless. And, many times before when the words I'm useless came up in the mind, I somehow believed it. But then I started, practicing root cause inquiry and noticing the idea over and over again and over and over again. Then what I would experience is that one day, something would happen. Maybe I couldn't solve some kind of a problem. And my mind would say, I'm useless. And I would giggle. I would laugh. And I always knew that when a thought came up, a thought that I had been stuck with for eons, and when it came up and I laughed, I mean, literally it was humorous, that's when I personally knew that I was done with a thing. That was a big way that I learned I was done with a thing, is when I would giggle at the thought. Like when I'm letting go of hate, for example, and the thought comes up, I just hate him, and then I laugh. That's when I'm done. I mean, a genuine laugh. It would end with a giggle. But again, what brought the end to so many different ideas for me was looking at them again and again and again, and just looking at them through root cause inquiry. So again, number one of the skills that I'm teaching, spiritual aspiration. Number two, contemplation. Number three, inquiry and noticing. Number four, letting go and relaxing. Letting go and relaxing, for me, primarily, it was when the emotion that goes along with the belief comes up. So, I don't know if I've told you guys the story about when guilt died for me. It's a very interesting story. It was a very interesting experience, I should say, to live through. I laugh because I don't know if it's an interesting story, because I don't know when I tell the story if you can really imagine what I lived through. But what happened was I had joined a Yahoo group, and the day that I joined that Yahoo group, the administrators of the group told me I was not welcome there. And yet I felt clearly guided to stay, not for any particular reason, which is how you know it's guidance. I wasn't doing it because I just knew to stay. So I did, and I would post every day. And what was really interesting is, again, the administrators had told me I wasn't welcome there. And they told me, that I couldn't post there. And they had the ability to block my posts so that I couldn't post there. But even though they had told me I wasn't welcome there and my posts weren't welcome there, they let me post every day. But then after I posted, they'd, be like sharks coming after it and just, kind of attack, 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 attack. So I thought, I'm here to let go of the desire to defend. This is what it felt like to me. I'm here to let go of the desire to defend. So I would post every day, and then they would swarm and attack every day. And I wouldn't say a thing. I wouldn't come back. I wouldn't defend myself. I wouldn't do anything, right? And what finally happened was, it was really cool because I could post and they could swarm and attack and I didn't feel anything. So I thought that I had really learned the lesson. But then what happened was, somebody else came into the group, and this person introduced themselves and said, I'm a new course student. And then excitedly shared some kind of clarity the person felt they had arrived at in their contemplation of the course. And you know what? These sharks swarmed on that person. And that upset me. Because here this is a brand new person, to the course. Here they are in a course community, and they're getting treated this way. And so I was very polite. I wasn't angry. I mean, I was on the inside maybe, but very polite in my email, not angry words. But I wrote and said something, and I defended this person. And as soon as I sent the email, I was overcome with so much guilt. I can't tell you. I mean, I really cannot tell you. You would have thought that I had just murdered someone. That's how much guilt there was. Like, without thinking, I had murdered someone. And I think that the guilt came from this idea. Again, the idea was that I had been sent into this Yahoo group to learn not to defend. I had thought I had done a pretty good job at learning not to defend, and then I just defended. Maybe I wasn't defending myself, I was defending someone else, but I defended. And the feeling was as if I had betrayed God. you know, and the guilt. I mean, you can't imagine the guilt when you betray God. You're pretty damn guilty when you betray God. And so what happened was this enormous amount of guilt that it was really exaggerated concerning the situation. This enormous amount of guilt came. And at the same time, I mean, every cell in my body felt guilty. All of the thoughts in my mind were telling me how guilty I was. But it was almost as if there was like this one cell behind my right ear that knew this was my chance. This was healing. And it just asked me to practice rest, accept, and trust with this guilt. To just breathe, just be, don't do anything, allow it. And again, the guilt was so huge. I can't even begin to tell you how huge it was. I have never felt guilt like that in my life, no matter what I did. Never. I mean, this must have been centuries worth of guilt. You know, if in previous lifetimes I've murdered people, all that guilt came up. You know, if in previous lifetimes I abused children, all that guilt came up. I mean, it was really exaggerated. And I practiced rest, accept, and trust. I breathed. I allowed it. I trusted I was healing. I did not do anything. You know, like one thing the mind wanted me to do was go back and write again some other post that would somehow defend my defending or something, you know, so that I wouldn't be guilty anymore. You know, do something to remove the guilt. But I did nothing. I did nothing. That guilt, I mean, it really didn't, as big as it was, it really didn't take that long to move through. It took about 4 hours, which is not that long. I have never believed in guilt again. Not for me, not for anyone else. It doesn't mean that I don't see mistakes. It doesn't mean that I don't see another choice could have been made. It just means I don't believe in guilt. I simply don't believe in guilt, right? So rest, accept, and trust is very, very healing. Ruby took the mic this morning, and she was talking about the fear that was coming up. And I thought I heard fear in her voice. I don't know if any of you guys felt the same way. I know Ruby pretty well. You know, she used to live here in Pueblo. I've heard her voice many, many times. And I thought I could actually hear fear in her voice. But it sounded to me like Ruby was learning to be with that fear. You know, just be with it. Just allow it. She called it letting go. But it really, you are letting go when you're doing nothing. It moves through. You're letting it go. It doesn't mean it goes quickly, right? It doesn't mean it goes quickly, but you're letting it happen. You're letting it go on until it ends, right? That is healing. And again, she talks about how it takes courage to do that, and I agree with her completely. It takes courage. What the ego wants to do is quickly repress, quickly escape this. But if we quickly repress, if we quickly escape this, what we actually do is keep it. We keep it. So this fourth skill, letting go and relaxing, is really about those emotions and being able to let those emotions thrive until they die a natural death. You let them bloom, blossom, thrive, and then they begin to fade and they die. It's an incredible, incredible, important practice. So that takes us then to number five, which is what I talked about last week. Five is meditation and self-inquiry. And if there's time, again, tonight I would like to do a little meditation, because to talk about meditation is a little bit silly. Although some talking about meditation happens in order to get us to the point of meditating and in order to help us know what to do when we do meditate. But talking about meditation, in a way, is not much of anything. It's meditation itself that that has any power to it. So if we have a bit of time tonight, we might do a little bit of meditation. We did a tiny bit of self-inquiry meditation last week. And so what I would like to do tonight is a little bit of loving consciousness meditation, if we have the time to do that. But I demonstrated the self-inquiry meditation last week because that's a type of meditation that I use to really help put my attention on awareness so that I can practice awareness, watching awareness, or the loving consciousness method of meditation. Now, one thing I want to say right now is last Wednesday night, Jay was not available, so I taught the Michael Langford study group. And when I taught the Michael Langford study group, what I taught was chapter 10 of How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. And chapter 10 of How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love is the instructions for the loving consciousness meditation. And so I recommend, if you're really interested in the loving consciousness meditation, I recommend that you go and listen to that audio. And you can find that audio if you go to awakening-together.org. Underneath audios, sanctuary highlights, look for the Michael Langford study group. And that, of course, would be the audio that was dated 12/7/16. And if you listen to that audio, you'll have a clear understanding of the instructions for the loving consciousness method of meditation. And then again tonight, hopefully we'll get to practice that. That's my favorite. That's my favorite meditation. But as I mentioned last week, awareness, watching awareness is also an excellent meditation. That comes from Michael Langford's The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. Adyashanti's Allowing Everything to Be as It Is meditation from his book True Meditation is also excellent. Right? And then, of course, maybe you're just inspired by Nisargadatta Maharaj and his focusing on the I Am. And if that inspires you, that meditation is equally good. It's the same thing, actually, just worded differently. But as I pointed out, I use self-inquiry, Ramana Maharshi's self-inquiry, in order to focus my attention on awareness. And I showed you last week through my demonstration how that self-inquiry works. But why don't we just practice a very, very brief self-inquiry right now? Let me turn on a sound that we can play with. Let's see. Here's some bird sounds. Let's listen to the birds for a moment. Can you guys hear the birdies? Okay, close your eyes and just listen to these birds. Listen very, very deeply to the birds. There's a lot of different birds in this recording, so you have the opportunity to hear a lot of different sounds. Notice that you are aware of the bird sounds. Now within your mind, ask, what is aware of these sounds? And turn your attention to the awareness that is aware of the bird sound. You can still hear the sounds, that holds your attention with the awareness that is aware of the sounds. If needed, ask yourself again, what is aware? Hold your attention with the awareness. Notice the bird sounds are gone, but the awareness remains present. And amen. And I just say amen to stop the brief meditation. That was just an example of how self-inquiry is used, or at least how I use self-inquiry, to place my attention on the awareness. Who is aware, or what is aware, right? First, become aware. Step one, become aware. Whether you're aware of a sound, like we just were with the birds, or often I'll start with feelings in the body. I will close my eyes and become aware of what's going on within the body. Different sensations in the body, and I just sit and be aware of the body. And then I ask, what is aware of these sensations? And turn my attention to the awareness and rest there. So that's how self-inquiry works, with the awareness, watching awareness meditation. And as I mentioned last week, the reason this meditation is so powerful, the awareness, watching awareness, the loving consciousness method, Nisargadatta's focusing on the I am, or Adyashanti's true meditation. The reason these are so powerful is that you are literally paying attention to the true self. You're giving your attention to the true self. And remember last week I talked about the heart rock that Michael Langford gave me? Remember I told you how he said he took his trash out to the end of his driveway for, 17 years or something like that? Never saw this heart rock. One day he looked down, there it was, right? And he gave it to me because he said, this is how most people live. They live their entire life without ever giving attention to the true self. He says, just like I walked over this rock and didn't see it for 17 years, they live with the true self and they never give it attention. Awareness, watching awareness, or the loving consciousness method of meditation, the true meditation of Adyashanti, focusing on the I am, this is giving attention to the true self. And this is how we awaken. This is an important part of our awakening to the true self, is giving it attention every day. Now, in addition to sitting down and meditating, whether you do that for 30 minutes, for an hour, for 2 hours, for 4 hours, for 12 hours, whatever you do, in addition to that sitting down and meditating and just giving it full attention, you can also practice the many glimpses throughout the day. Many, many times throughout the day. You know, you could be washing dishes, but there are other things. You could be mowing the lawn. You could be taking out the trash. You could be watching TV. And then you remember to ask, you know, maybe if you're washing dishes, you're feeling the warm water on your hands. And then you could just remember to ask, what's aware of the feeling of the warm water? What's aware of it? Or maybe you're mowing the lawn and you smell that fresh cut grass. And then you can ask, what's aware of the smell of fresh cut grass, right? Or maybe you're watching TV. And then you ask, what's aware of the television? You know, you can practice it anytime, anywhere, no matter what you're doing, to get brief glimpses. These aren't times when you're going to be doing it for, you know, focusing on awareness for an hour. These are times when you're going to focus on awareness for what Bentinho used to call 3 to 5 seconds. 3 to 5 seconds many, many, many times during the day. And I think it's wonderful if we practice both, right? The time that we can, and we all have different schedules and different tolerances for meditation, but the time that we can practice the focused meditation, but then when we seem to be up and around, practice the many glimpses. And that way we are paying attention to the true self, and this helps to awaken us to it. Now, Dolores is asking, where is the Nisargadatta meditation? Nisargadatta talks about the meditation in I Am That. He says that his guru told him to focus on the I Am presence to the exclusion of everything else. And he trusted his guru. And so in all of his free time, he practiced focusing on the I Am presence. This would have been in a sitting, closed-eyed meditation. In all of his free time, he practiced focusing on the I Am presence. And I think he says within 3 years, he awoke. Michael Langford, if I remember correctly, from the time he discovered the awareness, watching awareness meditation, he began practicing on a very regular basis, a daily basis. And in fact, he says he had more 12-hour days than 2-hour days of meditation. So he was very, very focused. And he awoke within 2 years. So you can tell this practice of meditation, it is a very, very strong, strong skill, highly recommended as a part of this. But in addition to the meditation, the spiritual aspiration, you know, again, Nisargadatta will tell you what's most important is earnestness and sincerity. Earnestness being the same thing as the spiritual aspiration, right? Michael Langford talks about how the most important thing is the intense desire for liberation, or the intense desire for Manonasa, depending on which book you're reading. That's the same thing as the spiritual aspiration. And we saw that Adyashanti says that the spiritual aspiration is most important. He said it cannot be emphasized enough. And, you know, I was watching Alon Jiva the other day, and he was saying the same thing. So the spiritual aspiration, very, very important. Contemplation. Adyashanti taught how he contemplated through journaling in true meditation. If you get that book, he talks about how he learned to write. He calls it writing beyond his current knowledge. That was contemplation, writing beyond his current knowledge. Michael Langford has this whole book, The Seven Steps to Awakening for the Purpose of Contemplation. He also puts quotes in How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love, 8 chapters of quotes for the purpose of contemplation. So again, there, you know, and if you go to the Awakening Together website and you look under Sanctuary Programs, you'll be able to find the link to the page about our contemplation circle. And there you'll find quote after quote of masters, you know, Eckhart Tolle, I think I have Shankara on there, different masters talking about contemplation and what contemplation is. So again, highly recommended, right? Of course, we know that the inquiry, that Byron Katie has an inquiry, Choose Again has an inquiry. We know that Tess Hughes used inquiry. We know that Bentinho Massaro used inquiry. Of course, Regina Dawn Akers used inquiry in order to look and see what these false beliefs are. You see, these skills that I am giving you are skills that have been used over and over and over again by people who have been successful in transcending the ego, either completely or to a significant degree, right? So again, the skills that we're looking at, and of course we know all about the skill I haven't just now emphasized, the rest, accept, and trust, and how important that is, the letting go, the relaxing. So the first 5 skills that we've looked at, again, spiritual aspiration, contemplation, inquiry and noticing, letting go and relaxing, meditation and self-inquiry. That takes us to number six. Number six is prayer and devotion. And number six may be the skill on the list that some people simply won't take to. And what I mean by that is there may be people who just don't have the devotional gene. And if they attempt to practice devotion, it just feels fake, it feels artificial. If that is the case, I just want to tell you that you can skip the prayer devotion step, because it's not helpful to do anything that really just feels inauthentic, right? Everything needs to feel authentic. But you could say that that is the purpose of the prayer devotion step, is to step fully into our authenticity. And for many of us, prayer and devotion is exactly the way we step into our authenticity. So, for example, if I'm quoting Michael Langford correctly, Michael Langford says something like meditation with the head. I think I got that right. 1 hour of meditation with the heart. If I've got anything wrong, it's the number. It might be 100, but I think it's 1,000. 1 hour of meditation with the heart is better than 1,000 hours of meditation with the head. And I can feel the difference. You know, like I know those days when I sat down, you know, because I did want to be committed to my meditation practice. And, you know, I looked at the clock and, oh my goodness, you know, it's already 8. I've got this appointment at 9:30. If I don't sit down and meditate now, I'm not going to get it done today. And I do want to. That's genuine, you know. So so I sat down and I closed my eyes and, you know, okay, you know, I need to do this now. And there's something about it. It's like the approach is coming from the wrong angle. You know, it is at the head level. There's just something wrong, and I can feel it. I don't know if you can. I can feel it. It doesn't feel effective. So when I sit down and I find I'm in that place where I'm just coming at it almost like it's another job that has to be done. You know, I need to meditate, and then, you know, I need to, let's say I had to answer emails, and then now I got to meditate. Then I have to do dishes, right? Like it's just fitting in the list. Another thing I got to do today. When I sit down and I have that feel, I turn to prayer. Because prayer shifts me from the head to the heart. And what I'd like to do is just kind of demonstrate for you all what a prayer might look like. And of course, each person needs to pray their own heart. But I want to show you what a prayer might look like and maybe what a prayer feels like. If you happen to feel this prayer, then you'll see how it shifts us to the heart. So why don't we please join me? Why don't we close our eyes? And whenever I pray, I'll just tell you, I actually start with silence because I don't want the prayer to come from the head. And so I start with silence until I feel a prayer arising from the heart. And then I just kind of go with it, kind of follow it, repeat it, you could say. And it's not that I hear words so much. It's just that there's a feeling that I'm putting into words. And that becomes the prayer. So why don't we close our eyes and let's just see what happens. Here I am. I am willing. I am willing to know truth. I am ready to be still. To see what I will be shown. To know what there is to be known. To be at peace. I am ready to place myself completely in the heart. To rest there with awareness. To see my true self, to be my true self, to know my true self, I surrender everything now, and I go into this time of focus. Not for a temporary experience, but in order to fully realize and fully embrace the truth that is always true. Amen. And then I'm ready to meditate from the heart. So that's the purpose of prayer. Prayer moves us from the head to the heart. Prayer is also useful prior to contemplation, because you don't want to contemplate from the head either, right? So you pray in whatever way feels genuine to move to the heart. One thing that can be really beautiful to pray for, especially for some people, is the prayer to wait, the prayer to be patient until something is given. Not only in contemplation, but just in life, you know, the mind wants to rush ahead, figure everything out, control everything, manipulate everything. So to pray a regular prayer of the willingness to wait, the willingness to be patient, the willingness not to move unless the steps that are to be taken are given, can help to keep us really in touch with the intuition. Another beautiful prayer that people pray often is before going to bed, praying that this sleep is used for the purpose of awakening and going to sleep with the heart. And then, of course, when in waking up, maybe even before getting out of bed, before placing your feet on the ground, praying that this day have the purpose of awakening. Praying that you will see whatever it is that you need to see, that your lessons be clear, that you embrace them fully. Whatever your spiritual aspiration is, you might pray for the reminder of the spiritual aspiration to stay with you throughout the day. I've often thought that in one way Muslims are very, very lucky, because prayer 5 times a day is a part of their tradition. Now, of course, if prayer just becomes rote, it doesn't really do anything. But if we were to pray genuine prayers 5 times a day, to shift from the head to the heart, because you know how it is, you shift from the head to the heart and then pretty soon you're back up in the head again, right? Out of habit. If we prayed 5 times a day, some type of genuine prayer that comes in the moment, that feels very, very real to me now, so that it pulls me into the heart again. 5 times a day. Think how much more of our lives would be lived from the heart. Now, of course, we practice a type of spirituality that is known as non-duality in one way or another. And non-duality would mean there is no me and no other. No me and a God to pray to. In fact, I remember when I was a teenager and learning about the Bible, and I was one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and Jehovah's Witnesses actually did not believe that Jesus was the Father incarnate. They believed that there was Jesus and there was the Father. So for me, whenever Jesus prayed in the Bible to his Father, he was praying to an other, which made perfect sense to me at the time. But I remember talking to other Christians who thought that Jesus was the Father, incarnate. And my thing to them was, then who the heck was he praying to? I knew I was right and they were wrong, because he had to be praying to somebody. But now I see that differently. Jesus was not praying to an other. Jesus was praying simply to drop into the heart, using the symbol of Abba, because that invoked devotion for him. And you might use the symbol of Jesus, because that invokes devotion for you. Or maybe you pray to Buddha, or maybe you pray to Ramana. Ramana prayed to Arunachala. I could pray to these beautiful Spanish peaks, that I can see from my back porch. Actually, I myself just pray to the heart. I pray to the heart itself. But it's not what you're praying to that matters. What matters is that your prayer shifts you to the heart. So any symbol at all that shifts you to the heart is good. And I think that's all I have to say about prayer. In summary, prayer is important because of the shifting to the heart. And although Michael Langford's quote was, 1 hour of meditation with the heart is worth more than 1,000 hours of meditation with the head, I would just say living from the heart is worth much, much more than living from the head. So not just meditation, right? We want to contemplate from the heart. We want to rest, accept, and trust from the heart. We want to go through our day with the heart. And prayer shifts us to our hearts. So that's the value of prayer. Now we have 10 minutes left. So why don't we try a little bit of loving consciousness meditation? I'll lead us into it, beginning with the prayer. And then while you meditate, because I'll be reading, which means I won't really be meditating, while you meditate, I will read from How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love in order to assist you in the meditation. So let's begin with the prayer. In this brief time that we have for meditation now, Let us get a true glimpse of the self and feel true love for it. Amen. You can use the bells to do that. Listen to the bells, the chimes, and then ask, what is aware of this? And turn your attention to awareness, to that which is aware. And even though your ears will still pick up the sound of the bells and the chimes, let your attention rest with awareness. Allow yourself to appreciate your awareness. Notice that awareness is the living background of all experience. You cannot hear the lovely sound of bells without awareness. Just appreciate awareness. Just be there, aware of awareness and appreciation for awareness. Don't expect anything of awareness. Let it be the simple awareness that it is. And appreciate it exactly as it is. Let your appreciation blossom. Just allow it to blossom into a feeling of love. Quietly and still, with your attention resting on awareness, while appreciation blossoms into love. be happy just to be here now. Loving awareness. Feeling love for something so simple. And yet this simplicity is the doorway to divine consciousness. Feel the magnificence of that. Feel appreciation for that. Feel love for awareness. Just be here in love with awareness. Still and present. Feel the silence in awareness. Notice how immense it is. So simple, and yet so boundless. Be aware and be in love. Take a deep breath. And take another deep breath. A third deep breath. And open your eyes. That's all the time that I have. I want to confess I was not reading. I thought I would read from How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love, but instead the instructions just started coming spontaneously, so I allowed that. But they were similar to the types of instructions you will find in How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. All right, that's it for me tonight, and I will see you guys next week for the last two skills in Awakening at Home.